Hi, Anne. Before we get started, Anne, we were chatting about this. Is there anything on the tech end you need for me to do with the recording? Okay,
Well,
I'll
I think on the participant list, if you can either make me co-host, or I think there may be also a drop down there to give me permission to record. It just makes it faster for going back and pulling
I
notes to.
see. Yeah, I see the record thing
Yeah,
now.
so
Or
that's.
you can do it on your own. Oh, no, maybe not.
There we
Okay.
go. Okay. Interesting. No, that doesn't. Strange. Well, if it doesn't record to my drive, then I'll just reach out to Talia again and it's fine. I'm not worried about that.
Sorry. All
No, so
right.
it's recording.
Okay, so let's get started then. I'll look into it too. I'm so happy to be with all of you. Thank you for, I don't know what the word is, it's not patience. Thank you for your understanding last week. We had to reschedule, and I'm glad that you and your family are doing well. And we are here for our second session. And I'm so excited. So this is our second session with Anne on hypnotherapy and NLP tips that we can use in our advanced techniques. And our first session, Anne gave us an amazing kind of overview of just some foundational understandings of the mind and how the mind works. And I'm so looking for that was amazing. And I've been so looking forward to our call today because we're going to get into the tips. We're going to get into the actual tips that we can use right away when we do befriend your fear, when we do choose your own shadow technique, when we use some of the other somatic techniques that we learn in advanced. And so I am super, super excited. The one housekeeping. I think it's just one housekeeping piece that I want to mention. Well, maybe two, actually. One is that we will have handouts for you. They're just not before the calls. We will have handouts at some point after the calls. But Anne, if you could pop in the chat like you did last time, the URL for the Google Doc so we can follow along with that. That would be great.
It would be great, wouldn't it? I don't have one today.
Oh, okay. So then forget that. No need. And then just the other, this is a little random, but just the other housekeeping piece I just wanted you all to know in my haste to reschedule the call from last week, I didn't realize until we rescheduled that I'm actually going to be in the airport next Monday. So the class will happen. Anne will be here. Inval will he be here to also hold space. But I'm just not going to be with us live next week because I'll be at an airport. And so with that, Anne, I'll let you take it away. I'm going to put myself on mute.
Yeah, so as I indicated, I do not have a pre-handout for you today. Nothing these last 2 weeks unfolded anything like the way that I planned. So handouts dropped to the bottom of the list, but you will have handouts by the end and they will go with the recordings. So never fear, they will arrive. They're just a little bit delayed. So, because the universe has an incredible sense of humor lately, it would seem. Before we start talking about our topical stuff, just because I know we all come from different events and are in different places where we're signing in for this, and I'm not going to do a big long grounding like last time, but if we can all just take a moment and just take a few nice deep breaths. And just allow ourselves to become fully present here. Whatever level of fully present is accessible to you today. And just notice if there's any distractions that are still floating around in the back of your mind. And just thank them for trying to get your attention, letting you know something they think is important. And just respond back by letting them know you'll have space to listen to them when we're done. And feeling them receding as you inhabit your body in this time and this place. And then coming back to the screen. Thanks for indulging me in that. I needed that too. So, last time we went through an information-packed model of the mind, and we were talking about the different levels or sections of the mind and how those rules are different. And we could spend a whole lot more time on that. But the thing I'm most interested in is making sure that you know how those rules between our ordinary consciousness, sometimes people call that normal waking consciousness or the conscious mind, differs from the subconscious mind, which is what we're typically accessing in trance state. And as we talked about last time, if we try to use the analytical tools that we would employ in an ordinary conversation like we're having now, it sends the subconscious mind out of its vastly creative and expansive connection-making, insight-providing mode and into the analytical mind's kind of critical analytical thinking, that conscious mind's critical analytical thinking mode, which accesses a much smaller chunk of our human computer's accessible memory. Now, I know that some of you sent me a couple of questions, and the questions were amazing. And thank you for that, because it let me know that you were really listening and you were really thinking and listening for how can I use this? How can I apply this in my circumstance? How does this expand? And some of it is, in fact, outside of the scope of what we had planned to cover. But never fear, there will be ways to look at that. More on that next time. And I'm just trying to look because there was a question there I did want to make sure. Okay. One of the questions I just want to make sure that I noted that we're not really going to talk about is brainwave states. That is much more the brain science side of things. And that research is changing all the time. Every few years, there's something new about that. What I can tell you is that we tend to associate or have tended to associate hypnotic states or trance states as far as the usable ones when you're doing work with a client in a therapeutic setting, therapeutic conversation kind of thing. We tend to associate that more with an alpha brainwave state. As far as theta, I do know people who are very much into theta healing. And who know far more about it than I do. And I don't really feel qualified to address that. But I can say that the few forays that I've had into that from the client side, I've really enjoyed. So that may be a fun thing if we want to set up an informal time to just chat after these three classes are over to share various expertise. That could be a creative outlet for a lot of us. So we won't really get into that in this at all. We may next time be able to get a little bit more into talking about how does this shift group versus individual. Some of that may come up today in terms of talking about language, because obviously we use language differently and apply techniques differently depending on whether it's a one-on-one private interaction versus perhaps a more distanced group interaction. Less difference when it's in person versus remote, whether it's on video versus audio only. There's more difference in what you're able to perceive than there is in what you would say and how you would respond. So I just want to preface because those are the things that I was kind of seeing coming up. So today we want to talk about the rule book for trance. That's kind of how we're starting this one out. And the tagline is words matter. We talked a little bit last time about how certain words can trigger certain thought states. Asking somebody why triggers a critical analytical state of thought, which pulls us into conscious mind processes and out of the more expansive, creative, but less linear, logical subconscious processes. And so we know from a sacred depths perspective that crafting a good question is everything. And Joanna has been absolutely masterful in teaching people how to thoughtfully craft good questions that boil something down to its essence. And I would say that most, if not everything that Joanna has taught us, has taught you, those questions are solid, whether they are in our ordinary consciousness conversation with a client or whether they are in a trance state. There may be some tweaks in delivery, or we might simplify language or tie it to some other sensory state. But generally speaking, they're good. They're good examples. Unless they have why in them. And then we just have to shift how we're going for that information. So when we're talking about crafting effective questions and suggestions in trance states, one of the places that we look for basic information is from the world of NLP. So neurolinguistic programming looks a lot at how do we interact with language. Neurolinguistic, brain language, right? How does the language affect how we take it in, how we process it, how we encode it, how we analyze it, how we create strategies with it, and how we spit it back out? I'm trying to remember how much of this I actually said last time. I think I only did a tiny, tiny touch on it. Okay. So if we think about our five senses, our five physical senses, we have hearing, sight, taste, touch, and smell. Most people are going to have what we would call a primary representational set, which is to say one sensory mode that is primary for them and how they relate to the world. Usually you're talking visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. Less commonly, you might find somebody with a gustatory or olfactory primary orientation. It's just much less common. How do we know what somebody's rep set is? Anybody want to just like go off mute and throw out a guess?
I mean, you can listen to how they say things, right? I mean, if they're saying, oh, I see how that is, or I feel you there. I mean, like, you know, it could be that way. I personally am always, I might look rude, but I'm always doing shit when I'm interacting with people. But I think leaves me as more kinesthetic.
Yeah. So it's not, and I love that you bring that up because it isn't cut and dry. There's a primary rep set for how we take information in, for how we strategize it, for how we spit it back out. And you can actually, it's kind of cool. I haven't done it in a long time, but you can actually map somebody's strategy through a conversation as you're talking with them about how they process it and where they put it as they're integrating it. And so Michelle, you're a really kinesthetic person. You use a lot of visual language. So it may be that the initial way that you take the information in has a visual rep set, but the way that you integrate it for yourself could be kinesthetic. And so those are things to notice. And there are certain characteristics, and just want to make sure I have, there's a piece of notes from last time I wanted to make sure I didn't miss. So the pacing is one of the things that can be a clue. So, and part of this does have to do with the brain science. And I used to actually know like the speed of processing and I don't anymore. And it's not, the numbers aren't relevant. Visual processing has the fastest neural speed. We process visual information like that. Auditory is the next fastest, and kinesthetic is the slowest. And so when you think about how you experience that, if I ask you to notice something in your body, if I ask you to notice right now, what's going on in your gut physically? There are a couple of things that happen. One, you might instinctively close your eyes to direct your attention inward, or you might look down as if to look at your belly. You might just kind of turn off your visual input to take your attention inside. And you are noticing in real time every bubble, squeak, whatever that is that's happening in there, right? Kinesthetic is the slowest. So when we talk about making body memories, it takes the longest to make a body memory or to anchor something in body memory. It's also one of the most secure for that reason. So the one that's in the middle is auditory. You know, you hear in real time, but if you're imagining hearing something, you may actually be imagining it faster than its real life rate and processing that in your mind in terms of your memory. Speech moves faster than flesh. Images move faster than speech. And thought moves the fastest of all. But thought isn't a rep set. So I'm a very visual person. And one of the ways I used to say, oh, I'm not a visual person at all. And my NLP trainer said, are you nuts? You are the fastest talker in the room. Even if you weren't constantly using visual language, just the innate rapidity of your speech tells me, first and foremost, you're visual. Now, that said, so like, but I have to be able to see the words, hear the words, like, I need you to tell me something. I need to read it in a book. He's like, right, you need to read it in a book. You need to see the visual abstraction of the word on page. But if somebody reads the same thing to you, your recall of it probably is only 70% than if you saw it on the page and made the mental imprint. He's probably right about me there, right? But I also have a really strong kinesthetic sense when it comes to processing intuition and integration. So if I really want to own it, I have to have the opportunity to slow it down. And if I can combine all three, I'm golden. You might be completely the opposite. If anybody has ever said to you, oh my gosh, do you think you could talk just a little faster? I can't even follow you because you talk so slowly. You're probably a kinesthetic processor. That's my husband. Something that's weird saying husband. It's just a weird word. But I'm also strongly auditory. I'm a musician. So I live for auditory input. But if I've learned the piece, if I've learned that aria, when I'm hearing it, do you know what's happening inside my head? I'm seeing the page of music with the notes moving across. So how many of you here would say, just from the quick description of the speeds and of the experience, you also might notice if you're an auditory person that you have almost a body experience of information coming in the sides of your heads or coming in your ears. How many of you would say you're primarily an auditory person? If you hear it, you know it. Nobody, huh? Interesting. Maybe a little bit. Carrie, I see Carrie kind of.
Yeah. Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
So I want to say I'm auditory because I really like to hear and listen to things, but I have to write it down. So what does that mean? Like if I just listen and I don't write, it will not integrate. But if I listen and I write, even though I will like never look at the notes probably again, I integrate that way. So what does that mean?
What do you think it means?
I think it might mean I'm visual because I need to see it maybe. I don't know. Or I'm kinesthetic. I don't know. So, yeah, because I'm writing.
So we went through like a whole kind of analysis.
Yeah.
So you even said, I'd have to say, I think I'm an auditory person, right? So you used auditory language, even in describing the need to hear it, as opposed to, I think I'm an auditory person, or I see myself as an auditory person, or I feel that I'm an auditory person. I would say that. So yes, you have to hear it. There's something in hearing it and hearing the resonance that's really important to you. So that may be your primary way of taking it in, and part of your integration process or internal strategy probably has a kinesthetic component, because what I'm hearing you say is you have to write it down to really get it, even if you never look at the notes again. If you're a visual person, it's much more likely that you're going to take the notes and then want to see what you wrote to be able to understand it. So I would say you're probably auditory kinesthetic blend. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah. And so for everybody else, like, what are you noticing about just that interaction and how you could apply that when you're listening to a client or interacting with a client? Or maybe you think of a client you have now, like, oh, they're totally that, or this is a, what are you noticing? And just unmute and call out. It's chaos here.
I have a quick question before that. You kept naming reps, and I feel like you titled all these different ways of processing with a particular title, and I missed what that was that you named it as.
Fair enough. It's called a representational set. So how does your brain primarily represent the world? Is visual representations, auditory representations, kinesthetic representations, or less commonly olfactory or gustatory representations?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and sometimes you'll see it in NLP documents, or they just write VAK, what's that person's
movement. And so I often will have some particular clients that really actually are not kinesthetic processors. And so then navigating how to be able to like use imagery and use mostly it's imagery, but also very specific words to help then guide them to feel even more of that kinesthetic awareness and connection.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you say about that, because there's great value in also guiding people from where they kind of natively land into something that maybe is less familiar as a means for deepening their understanding, because they don't naturally go to that place. Sometimes taking them there on purpose gives them an insight that they would not otherwise have received. And so you have someone responds to tactile cues. Yes, tactile cues means kinesthetic. Yep. Yep. And sometimes it's a described tactile cue. I used to say that I wouldn't even know how to do a hypnosis session with somebody if I couldn't physically touch them on the shoulder or feel, you know, how loose their hand was, because for that world, reading the kinesthetic cues is important to me, but it's also sometimes important to them. And then you find out that, yeah, everybody, not everybody has that same thing. I think I see Lissa's got a hand raised. Lissa. Wait, there's more hands. There's a lot of hands.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I'm not at all auditory. I have to take notes or I literally can't hear. And when I go to conferences and things and they say, put your paper down, just listen. Like, I'm like, I can't, because I won't be able to, I have to write it. And I used to be able to, if I wrote a shopping list, it could be a really long list. And if I left it on the counter, I could call up that list in my mind's eye and come home and check it and say, eh!
Yep. Yep.
But if I do listen to things, I have to be knitting. I have to be driving. Otherwise, I literally cannot listen. I cannot hear what they're saying. I have to be doing something.
Yeah.
So,
and that brings up an important point too, that for a lot of us who are neurodivergent, finding something, whether it's background sound or background physical activity, to tie up some of the neural static so that our attention can focus in a different way is really important. And for some people, it's not the physical fidgeting. Some people it's, they have to have music on the background when they study, and other people it's, they've got to have something to do with their hands so that their ears can listen to what's in the room instead of what's in their head. Yeah, good point.
Oh, so it's like, so that I'm not listening to what's in my head. I have to override my own thoughts in order to listen.
Maybe, I mean, I do. This is what I have, like, I can't function at teaching or client work if I don't have like bracelets and rings to fidget with. because it helps me to be able to focus. Otherwise, the meds don't work as effectively. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's different ways that we can apply this in our own lives. And, you know, if you know that about yourself, or say if you know about yourself that you're strongly kinesthetic, and you, which means you've got also some of the slowest rate of taking information in, and you have a client who's highly visual, then you know you might pre-frame for a client. I may ask you from time to time to slow down and repeat something so that I can really take it in and integrate it for myself and make the best use of it, instead of panicking like, oh my gosh, they talked too fast and I missed what they said. So the things you know about yourself really come in handy here too. And okay. And I think next on my screen is Simona. Did I say it right?
You did. Thank you. I wanted to build on the question Fran asked, and lessons out of scope, in which case, please just point me where to read on the rep sets. I heard you say how you take it in and how you integrate it. Are there any other major buckets of rep sets for us to be on the lookout? Cause I love that, thinking about how our, like, to be able to think about how our clients might be using this language so that we can, you know, work with their natural inclinations.
Yeah, there's a whole, and I'm going to make a note for myself to see if I can find you a good article about identifying the whole kind of strategic process that somebody goes through, their whole unconscious strategy. I'll see what I can find for you, because you can actually get pretty complicated with it. The key things I think for us as coaches is what they're expressing is usually going to be very much how they take things in at first blush as well. That's the overlay of how they relate to the world. There's how do they integrate the deep knowledge? Do they need to see it in their mind? Do they need to hear the words in their own ears? Do they need to say it in their own voice or have it reflected back to them by having the words spoken to them? Is it a body thing? Is it a kinesthetic thing? So the other piece in there, I can read my own handwriting. It's how they process the information. So sometimes you might have a visual person who you give it to them, you know, in visual language, and then they kind of pause and they go, okay, so let me see how that sounds in my own head, right? So you can hear how they're starting to shift from one part of the strategy into the next. Let me see how that sounds. Those don't go together, right? I actually say that all the time. And then IQs are a thing in NLP, roughly speaking, looking straight ahead or looking up to either side is visual accessing. Looking out to the sides is audio accessing, auditory accessing, and looking down to either side or down at the body would be kinesthetic accessing. And then there's stuff about, are they accessing memory or are they constructing? Are they thinking to the future? Are they thinking to the past? Sometimes it's flipped for some people. I don't really worry about that anymore so much. It's not, you can notice it. You know, if I say, think about the first bike that you ever had and you notice which direction your eyes go, that's your memory direction. If you never had a bicycle and you have to think about what a bicycle looks like, you might go to your constructing side instead. Anyway, that's a little bit of a digression. So there's how they process it. So if somebody were, for example, to say, let me see how that sounds for me. And then some kind of go, And they're moving their head side to side, like they're listening to two different people talking to them. That tells you that part of their processing shifts into an auditory mode before it's integrated. And it might be that that's also where they integrate. And then they come up with a statement that pulls it all together. So I, like I said, I did make a note to look up for how to assess rep set strategies. And I'm just gonna—
I appreciate that. But your explanation was really helpful. I'm hearing two things. One is how they're taking the information in, and one is how they're integrating it. And those could be two different things. So I have the tools to that. I mean, of course I'm gonna love if you find an article, I'll read it, but I feel really good. Thank you.
There are some websites now that didn't exist even 10 years ago for people who really want to dive into the minutiae of learning NLP that teach a tremendous amount of that discipline for free. And I'll see if I can add those to a handout. I'll just put a resources section on the handout for you with some of those as an, you know, if you want to go further. It can be a deep, deep rabbit hole too. It's fun.
Like I said, I appreciate, and if you have the time, I'll take a look at what you offer, but this answered like in terms of the context of coaching what I was looking for. So thank you. I feel complete.
Well, hopefully no surprise trips to the Surge Center for me this week. So that should keep it normal. Oh, I had to say it out loud, didn't I? It should keep it normal. God, what did I just invite? And then I saw another question, Michelle.
What you said, so my people are presumed visual processors, right? It's a presumption about how you're going to function, right? And the way they speak, the way they think, the way they, you know, hand out information, it's like super fast processing. And often people will come to me and say, I can't write that fast. I can't do this that fast, right? Which suggests that they actually have a profoundly different way of processing information that's not aligned with what the industry expectations are. And like they're measuring themselves in ways that are profoundly, well, actually damaging for them, right? Yeah. And they're probably more likely to burn out, et cetera, because they can't, there's nothing wrong with them. They just don't function in the way that everyone is expected to function.
Yes.
And that's fascinating.
And that brings up something that's important is that you do see some differences culturally. So Western culture in general is much more visual. American culture, highly visual, pushes visual, values visual. And now for good or for ill, we have all of these, you know, phones in our pockets, that's constant visual input. And even though there's a tactile component of flipping through things, what are we flipping through as a culture? We're flipping through Facebook, we're flipping through Instagram, we're looking through reels, we're watching videos and pictures and taking things in memes and sound and little, not the sound bites aren't even sound bites anymore. So we've pushed our whole culture even further to the visual. So for people,
although that's actually changed over time, right? I mean, like there was a period where you didn't have visual, right? You were on the radio, right? So you were forced to do things auditorily. I would imagine pre-radio, right? If you're trying to figure out what's happening with the weather.
Yeah, what's happening?
What do I actually do now? What's happening on the roads? Like, do I do, right? Like you would probably be kinesthetic in the way that you processed it. So it's even within 100 years, we've completely radically shifted how we're expected to process stuff.
Absolutely. And so the people who trend more in line with the predominant culture have an easier time. And those who trend a little bit not as aligned with that tend to have to try to make their own way and figure out their own hacks. And so in a visual culture, if you're auditory or kinesthetic, you may find yourself having to create strategies to filter information as to what's most important to you and trust that you'll be able to go back and find it later, pick it up or fill in the gaps or whatever. And we're not always structured for that. And so that's a thing to know too, especially if you have a client who spent most of their childhood in a culture with a very different predominant representational set. Their alignment or misalignment with that may be different than their alignment or misalignment with the culture that they're living in. So that's a whole other fun. I mean, I geek out on this stuff. I could spend 6 hours with this stuff, which is not what you're here for today.
Can I add something or ask a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So just to bring it back to the techniques.
Yes.
Tell me if I'm making this assumption based on what you've been sharing, but I want to make sure that it's a correct assumption. So not in the techniques, befriend your, you know, all the different techniques. Just when I teach listening skills, you know, I tell practitioners, listen, some things that we're looking at today, like is the person a visual learner? I mean, you've shared it all so much more eloquently because you have the science behind it. And, you know, how you ask questions, et cetera, you want to match that, you know, different things. I think what I'm understanding from what you're saying, but tell me if this is true, is that if we can, as practitioners, figure out if our client is a visual processor, an auditory processor, kinesthetic processor, when they are in trance and when we're leading them through trance, they're more open to suggestion based on what their primary, how they're primarily processing.
Yes. And so that's bullet point three for today. That's a so we're moving there also, but that's excuse me. If we start where they are, right? You always start where your client is, which is what you teach us, right? Then we can also be listening for, watching for, feeling into where's the place they don't like to go. That might be where their best insight is. And so once we develop, so an NLP, and I mean, we talk about developing rapport with people, but that's actually a technical term in the practice of NLP. Once we're in rapport with somebody, once we're in rhythm with them, or I mean, really, when we're talking about this, we're also talking about being in trance with them more often than not. We can feel, notice, hear, see, depending on how we are perceiving. Where is that point where they're ready for some new information? And then we can shift our sensory language to provide a different kind of information, a different view, a different term, a different feel, a different resonance, depending on what senses we're looking at, to help bring them into. And I'm gonna, so one of my hypnotic mentors, hypnosis mentors, a malleable state, right? Once the mind becomes willing to accept that change is possible and acceptable, it becomes open to the change and it becomes much more globally malleable. So once we can sense that they are in a state where they're with us, they're listening to the words that we're using, they're going to the places in their imagination that we're asking them to, then we can start to tip it into those insights, guiding them into the insights that we're wanting them to have. So, you know, a lot of times we think of it as lead, guide, follow, you know, and then integrate, right? But really, it's the reverse in how we do the process. We start out following our client to learn where they want to be. And then we begin to guide them where they've said they want to go. And then when we have a little momentum with that, we can lead them into the places where they're going to find the deep, rich insight that's going to help shift everything. And then we get to go back into following mode again. Does that make sense? Did I answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And I think I saw another hand. Yes, involved.
So to me, it seems that like knowing how your client processes and integrates and or integrates the, or I guess they're always integrating, but they could be different ways, would help not just in trance, but just in general how you engage with them.
Correct. And I have actually had the experience earlier in my career of kind of missing one of these cues. Somebody was strongly kinesthetic, and I just kept using visual language because that was what I was used to, and that's how I was seeing everything. And they say, I'm just not getting it. Like, I just can't get a feel for what you're telling me. And it's just not connecting. And had I known then what I know now, it would have clicked. Ah, I need to choose different sensory language, even in introducing the work. And then it goes more smoothly. So I just can't get a feel. Exactly. So, and that also applies sometimes, not just for the words we're using, which is it's a great transition to the next point on my little outline here. That listening and pacing and language matter. And we'll come back more to the words and how to like write the sentences. But I want to go into some of the pacing as well. So as was mentioned before, in the last class, do we go into trance with our clients? Very often, yes, and more often than not, it goes better if we let ourselves. because we then are also in a sensory state that's more similar to them, and we're able to better perceive their shifts because we've slowed ourselves down. They're in a slower state, and we also have slowed ourselves down. So listening for the words, listening for the sensory orientation that rep set is one thing. Pacing also. So if you have a client, if you have somebody like me who walks into your office, who's a super fast talker, and you're not, you have two choices, right? You can put right out there, right up front, I think I probably speak a little more slowly than you do. Hang in there with me. I promise we'll get there. So that's one way to approach it. Another way to approach it is intentionally speed up your pace of speech. If there are things that you know that you say every time with every client that are part of the beginning, that are part of the questions, that are part of the review, and they've come in going a mile a minute, you can either match up to their state or offer them an opportunity to match down to yours. So I knew I was coming into today's class kind of energetically like a bat out of hell, and that wasn't going to be a good place to start from. So I could have just done my own grounding, but instead I decided, let's just all do a little grounding. Let's just all get into the body a little bit, slow it down so that everything can kind of come up to a different equilibrium. So we can pace with our clients. We can pace if they ask a lot of short questions. We can also respond with brief phrases. It's not like that totally makes or breaks it, but these are the little things that sometimes help us to tilt the balance in favor of things being easier or not. And it's a thing to play with. It's actually a great thing to practice with one another. If you have a buddy, or somebody that you have a relationship with in this course, that you just like, hey, let's just practice doing these things and see what happens. So pacing, starting out by matching their pace. And then once you feel like you can begin to change your pace and they come along with you, you've developed rapport. You are in rapport. They are now in rapport with you, and they're beginning to follow you, which means you can be more directive and know that it will be received more quickly. Does that make sense? I don't know if I said that as clearly as I wanted to. I'm going to say more about it, but at least at an overview, is that?
So basically, you can be more, the more your paces are aligned, the more directive you can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the access from an NLP perspective, and remember, NLP is inherently manipulative because you are using somebody's natural patterns, you're learning somebody's natural patterns and using them to get better access, in this case, to get what they want out of their time with you. But this is also why this is taught in sales trainings as a technique for manipulating customers into wanting to buy. So some of the physical pacing things, patterning things, you'll see this in sales trainings, literally like in sales videos. Yep, matching and mirroring. Yes, exactly. Yes, Simona, matching and mirroring builds rapport. Building rapport allows clients' mind to become more malleable, more suggestible. Better rapport allows for being more directive. So like if you look at old school training videos for sales trainings, the whole, like, if your client, like if you're somebody's trying to buy a car, if the person who's wanting to buy the car, you know, is sitting on your sales desk with their hands, you know, on the desk like this, they'll train the car salesperson to sit on the table with their hands like that, not in a mocking kind of mirror, but just, you know, maybe not all the way, or maybe just like this, but similar physical posture. If the customer uncrosses their legs, the salesperson is taught to wait a moment and then uncross their legs. And then to start to do things, start to change things in their own physicality to see at what point does the customer start following their body changes? And that's when they know they can start to talk to you about all of the features that this car has and why you should pay $8,000 more than your budget. So that's a very bare bones kind of mirroring thing. But you know, having your body language mirror your client's body language when they first come in a soft way, it's a thing that people unconsciously notice that helps them to feel more at ease. When we mirror them in a way that isn't weird, something in them feels seen and known. And we want our clients to feel seen and heard and known and loved, right? And yes, reflecting and creating awareness, choosing a word that the client used, or using, you know, the difference between choosing a word that they use or something that's really different, and intentionally doing those things to see how it shifts their responses. Yes, Simona, you're. Let me just see. So listening, pacing, and pacing and mirroring for creating rapport, that is a matter of practice and awareness. And it is part of creating awareness in the larger sacred depths context. Excuse me. Which reminds me, one second. Yeah. So you know, NLP is about the inner communication that's happening within your client, but also clues about how to access that and tweak that. And this is also partly why I consider myself primarily a hypnotist with NLP skills, because I prefer the more overt stuff, but I like knowing the covert stuff because it helps me leverage without, but I don't like the more manipulative pieces of it. So I prefer to just be aware of things than to really intentionally do them. But if you know that learning how to do them on purpose will give you better access to noticing it in the future, then it's, you know, it's a valuable thing. And again, I'll put that in the resources when I finish the handout for this one, of websites where you can go where there's either videos or articles. I find fewer podcasts, but that explain doing this and that give you actual exercises to do, you know, with a partner. So I'm seeing some furrowed brows. Are there questions? Okay, good. All right, I'm gonna see, can I bring this up? I probably can't. You know what, I'm gonna share that article with you in the resources, because I think that's more effective time-wise. Ooh, I'm actually on my timeline closer than ever. That's good. So getting into the nitty gritty of the lead, guide, and follow, which is really follow, guide, lead, that dovetails in with how do we choose the words? How do we make the suggestions? So in order to effectively lead our client to where they want to be, we have to know where that is. Now, with Sacred Depths, we have a tremendous system for coaching. And I'm not trying to reteach Joanna's system, because like that, how could I? But there are things, again, from the hypnosis and NLP world that are very similar, or even the same in terms of how we think about creating goals and thinking about setting vision and milestones and all of that. So we're not going to go through the basic coaching skills part of it, because you have that and that's solid. What I want to do is give you this is where that comes from in the hypnosis and NLP world. I don't know if it comes from that for you, Joanna, but this is the foundation. And I mean, the NLP world very much gave birth to the coaching industry. So here we are. So there are certain presuppositions from an NLP perspective that we want to develop rapport with our client. If we're not in connection and in empathy with our client, it's hard to do the work. it's, yeah, yeah. And it's hard to do the work of being a coach, being a practitioner, if we don't feel connected and related to our client, and if we don't feel like we're in some kind of rapport, some kind of, I mean, if you're an empath, there's a whole other piece of it, right? So rapport is one. Becoming aware, like, so rapport is one thing, sensory awareness is another, which is becoming aware of what's their sensory orientation, what representational sets are primary for them, and is there, what's predominant and what's maybe not weak or missing, but what are we not noticing as much that we may need to bring in, right? Like when we think about the four levels of learning in sacred depths, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, we know for ourselves as practitioners from having been through this training, there's always one of those that we tend to shy away from personally, that we have to do on purpose if we really want to integrate all four, right? Unless you are the rare rock star who just like always has all four and you're just there. And there's one that we're like, yep, I just automatically go there and that's easy and run away from all the other three. Some of us are like that too. So that sensory awareness gives us that information. We also want there to be outcome tracking or clarity of outcomes. So that's where being able to say or write down or express in some fashion, this is the outcome that I want to have from our work together. And then you as a practitioner, being able to translate that with them into actions, whether those actions are doing inner work, inner trance work, whether those actions are, yeah, you're spending a whole lot of time in mindset work, but you aren't actually taking steps out in the world to do the thing. You've noticed Joanna always is asking us for, you know, what's your takeaway and what are you going to do towards that, right? Because without action, it's a lot of good ideas. And so having that clarity of outcome and having the outcome written in such a way in your notes and their notes that you can track, did it happen? And then the behavioral flexibility, creating a context of awareness with your client, which again is baked right into sacred depths because it's a beautiful system. This idea of behavioral flexibility, that in order to make change, we have to step outside of our comfort zone. And it's easier to step outside of our comfort zone if we've had an insight that makes sense to us and that makes taking action towards change attractive. So when we look at something like shadow work, right, deep work that is incredibly impactful, but that some people will want to shy away from because, you know, they put that in shadow for a reason, right? But as practitioners, we hear them using that binary language around it, right? Or they're expressing patterns that they're seeing in their lives that are all or nothing, right? So being able to create a context where there's a willingness to shift behaviors grounded in insights that are acceptable. So, which also hypnosis world, the establishment of acceptable selective thinking, right? We've chosen, we're willing to think a different way about something, often in hopes that it will give us new actions that we can take that will change our outcomes, that will change our realities. You already have all of this in the system, even if it isn't outlined in that way. It's all there. What I want for you by bringing it all together, saying, okay, these are kind of four pillars of NLP, and these are the things that are key to know about being in trance, is that as you're doing them, it's less, okay, I want to make sure I tick the box in the system here, and more, ooh, I see, I feel, I hear now how all of these different pieces of this system come together and tie into these core concepts that are all about leveraging how the mind works. Because Joanna's a freaking genius. So, and no, she doesn't pay me to say that. I believe it. So this outcome-oriented or clarified outcome piece, just being able to ask your client, what do you want? What's the fourth? So we have rapport, sensory awareness or acuity. Sometimes we talk about just being aware of what their sensory set is, outcome oriented or clarified outcome, and then behavioral flexibility. You know, if what you're doing isn't working, are you willing to do something different? Right. So there's different, you know, I can type this into chat.
I already did.
Okay. Yeah. And it's, rapport, I have to now because it's not, my brain has to finish its thing.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, please do.
Would that be like from kind of quote sales training, would that be sort of where permission-based questions come in, where you're sort of opening the idea for that behavioral flexibility? Like, is that kind of the translation of that, if you will?
Yep, absolutely. If you're asking somebody, if you're in a sales situation, you're asking somebody, so may I ask you a question? And they say yes. So now they're willing to have you ask them, to have you ask them to think about something that they hadn't been thinking about before, which then opens the door for also introducing information that they didn't have before. And that is also one of those make it or break it places. And I think we've probably all had these kinds of sales experiences where it's a difference between somebody saying, so may I ask you a question about that? And then you can hear that they are following a script that they've been given about what they're trying to find out and what they're trying to nudge us towards, but they're not actually listening to our responses. And have you ever noticed when that happens, we just go, I wanted it and now I'm not buying it, right? That's my, you know, persistent demand avoidance. Now I don't want it. Versus, okay, so what I hear you saying is you really like the idea of the 1998 Volvo because you know Volvos are really safe, but you're not loving how it rides, and the 2000 Nissan Maxima just rides more nicely, and you might be open to a vehicle that combined safety and smooth ride. Did I get that? And then you're like, yeah, you just said the dream. Now, if they put a car in front of you that fits the bill, you're much more likely to buy, right? And so that's the dance of, are you using that permission wisely? So that answer your question? I think, yes.
Totally. Yeah. No, because I do the things, but I also have to teach other people how to do it. And I want to teach them how to do it authentically. So yes. Kind of understanding the behind is like very helpful. So that's,
yes.
That's great.
So I want to add
a very much like the other resources that you will get then. And I want to add a piece to that, which is that, did everybody notice that's a yes, no question? And if you remember back to questioning skills, we don't often want to ask yes, no questions, but there are particular moments, whether we're coaching or selling, that the yes, no question is going to like blow it out of the park. And that is when we want our client or our prospect to signal to themselves that they are either giving permission or not giving permission to a new idea, to hear about the car, to, you know, whatever it is. And so it's in addition to getting the permission from you, the yes, no, you know, may I share more about this? Like in the sales conversation is also the client, the prospect giving permission to themselves to listen and to be open.
Yep. And anytime somebody says yes to any kind of permission question, unless it's a very clear yes, but in the way they're expressing it, sometimes, you know, with their physicality, they are in those moments more suggestible. They are more open. And whether it's that they're telling themselves something or open to you telling them something, like the yes, but it's like, can I tell you, may I tell you more about that? And somebody goes, I'm listening. You have provisional permission there. And that's where you would have a choice about whether to say, okay, well, let me go on with what I was going to ask you, or to say, it seems like maybe you're a little uncertain about that. Can you tell me more about what's going on? And you can do that with an established client. That something like that physical turning away and of like, I'm listening. So that indicates a loss of rapport. The loss of rapport might not be your fault. Loss of rapport can result from them hitting their own inner resistance, their own fears that are starting to come up that they haven't expressed or evidenced yet. But as the practitioner, it's still our job to tease that out and find how they can lean into that and be open to examining it differently, or whether maybe we need to take a different tack. Did we hit on something that's really tender that they're not ready for, versus they just need a moment to get used to the idea of doing the work? So, and that's where your questioning skills come in, to be able to draw out the nuance based on what preceded it. Is that a fair tie-in, Joanna?
100%. And okay. I put in the chat that follow-up you just beautifully demonstrated, one of our creating awareness techniques.
Right. So I don't mean to reduce your entire training down to four things, because it's so not. But it's funny. It's kind of like what I did with my thesis in college. Like I sort of had disproved my own point of my thesis. I didn't realize it was going to happen. But it's like, oh, this is so much more complex than this. No, it actually isn't. Like, it really does come down to a few simple things, a few simple tools, techniques, and patterns that keep repeating themselves in different ways. And if you can get those, it simplifies integration and use of all of the rest of it. And so now I'm just really glad we're doing this. Okay, that's a next time piece. All right, managing pacing. Okay. So we've talked about how rapport helps us to connect with, lets us follow our client for a little while, and then observe when they're ready to start to be guided. And when we realize it's time to lead, gives us access for that. And we're starting to notice how some of the languaging, whether it's verbal or whether it's body languaging, can give us clues about whether they're open or closed to new ideas. And you have, again, because Joanna, you know your curriculum better than anybody. So all of these pieces, right, in Sacred Depths that bring up the checkpoints, the points to notice, when to shift, when to ask a different question. And Carrie, you're going to definitely, I know I said I was going to look up the one article for Simona, but I'm just going to make a note for myself that you could use maybe some training sites that also have some of the maybe more, I don't know if I can find how many I can find with the scientific references to tie into it, but yeah, I'll see what I can find for that. And even if it's not within this next week, you have my info and we absolutely can email back and forth about resources. I'm as much as time and space allows, that's fine with me. All right, so rep set, language, pacing. Yep, so follow, match or mirror, guide, lead, and then follow again. You know, the eventually the bird has to leave the nest, right? So as much as we teach them how to flap their wings, let them find their strength, do their own thing, and do our best to guide them, at a certain point, there's a piece that only the client can do. And then that's a place where we can follow them. And that is absolutely a spot where if we are in trance work and we are allowing ourselves to be in that altered state of consciousness, it's easier to notice where they want to lead us. And that will tell us about their whole inner world in a way that sometimes even the best question can't tell us, because they will tell us about and show us and create a world about their world that we start to be able to share in. Those are my favorite moments. And I think I see a hand raised. Yes, there it is.
I just wanted to clarify on some things that I'm stuck back on when you were asking about the sensory representation sets. Mm-hmm. And then Michelle had said, well, we can tell by listening to the language that they use, like if they're saying, I feel this, I see that, I hear this. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to know, are we actually listening for them using those words, not just by intuiting their pace or how they're processing information? And is there anything else that language-wise we would be listening for?
Yes. And you just reminded me that one of the things I will look for you for a resource list, there are word lists, like literal pages of word lists of these are the words that a visual processor will tend to use. These are the words that an auditory processor will tend to use. These are the words a kinesthetic processor will tend to use. So if it's not something that is intuitive for you in how you're listening for their language, you can kind of orient yourself to some of the less obvious ones. You know, if somebody's saying, well, I see it this way, or, you know, this is what I hear in that, or I feel this deeply, if they're not using those three, there's a nuance to that. So the pacing does give us a lot of that information. To a certain extent, eye accessing cues can, but that's also relative to the kind of conversation we're having and the questions that we might be asking or what they're relating. So that doesn't always tell us about primary set. So yeah, I will find you word lists also. But it's just taking in all of the information in the background and noticing the patterns. And if it's a thing that you've never noticed before, I would bet that as you go through the next day or two, you're gonna find more and more than ever noticing how people speak about themselves or the world and what sensory experience trends in the way they describe those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it's helpful. Thank you. Okay.
Two pieces. One, just for anyone that it's helpful to have some specific homework to integrate the skill and take it to the next level. My invitation for you would be over this next week to pick three different conversations, whether it's a client conversation or a conversation with a friend or whatever it is. And during that conversation, pay special attention to see what cues you're picking up. Maybe make some educated, you know, guesses based on what we're looking at. And then if you feel comfortable, then ask the person and say, hey, I'm working on this. This is what I'm picking up. How does this land for you? My sense is that you're a visual processor. My sense is that you're a kinesthetic processor. I think that will just help build the skill.
Absolutely. That's good homework to give. I like that. Now I don't have to come up with a new assignment.
And then Anne, if we could go back to what you were just talking about right before Fran's question around letting the client lead and we can get insight into their inner world. Could you give us a client case example of that just to kind of make it a little more tangible?
Yeah, let me... This is funny. I'm noticing, like, I'm mentally kind of going through all the faces of clients. I'm looking up and I'm scrolling through their pictures in my head. I'm having a hard time coming up with one without having to give a whole bunch of extra context. So
that's okay.
Let me do this a different way. So how about the not being attached to outcome and going through the good stuff, following it? Yeah, okay. So yes, it's too much to ask about it in an intake form. So Joanna, when I was in Advanced Depths and we did the shadow retreat, there were the three pieces throughout the retreat, right? And shadow retreat's been pretty recent for this group, correct?
Nobody's had shadow yet here, unless some of you have done it before, but yeah.
I see. Okay. I don't want to give spoilers then. If we talk about three different pieces, is that spoilers?
If it's helpful to this conversation, well, yeah, maybe not.
So then we think of a different piece of work. So if I were to tell you about a piece of inner work that I did, right? Okay, here we go. We're going to make it fun and funny. So a few of you are connected to me on Facebook, so you know that I have recently named my uterus Lady Lumpy Left Leaning because she's lumpy with fibroids and she's starting to lean to the left, which is causing me some problems. And she is going to have, at some point when they tell me, a yeetening day, otherwise known as I'm going to have a hysterectomy. So I needed to do some inner work around accepting things as they are so that I stop making myself crazy with things not being the way I wish that they could be. So if I was your client, and I'm actually gonna close my eyes because it's easier for me to describe to you, right? You might ask me some of these questions, right? Like if I was saying I have this really difficult place where I just can't seem to embrace this situation, and I'm just really, really stuck. You might do something akin to a befriend your fear, try to trend it that way. So you might ask me to go into my inner landscape, turn my awareness inward, and just become aware of some representation of that part of me that I am struggling to make my peace with. And you might ask me things like, does it have a shape? Does it have a color? Does it have a sound? Is it moving or still? You know, all of these questions that we ask, which is all NLP stuff to describe, right? And then you might ask me to describe how this part of me, if I were to separate that out to be able to talk to it, how does this part of me seem? How does it look and sound and feel? And I could tell you that it very much looks like a velvet blue bag that's filled with irregular, lumpy objects, and it's sitting on a straight back chair, the kind that has the wooden spindles on the back, like I might have sat at the kitchen table as a child. And her legs are too short to reach the ground, and she has almost cartoonish Minnie Mouse glittery black high heels and long eyelashes on her cartoon-like eyes and very much cartoon-like arms with the sort of oversized hands. And she seems to actually be very polite, and I'm surprised by that. And you might ask me, okay, and where are you as you're sitting and talking with this part of you in this chair? If I create a world that says we're in a beautiful English cottage garden and I'm enjoying the sunlight and mist on my face, that gives you a particular feeling about the world of how I relate to her, but also how I relate to the spaces of my inner work. But you didn't ask me to go to my personal inner sanctuary with my future master self. You asked me to go within to connect with this part of me. And so I'm going to tell you, we're in a cave and the ground is dirt and it is moist, and I can hear dripping water in the background of the cave. And it's cool, but I feel safe. So just based on what I shared with you about how she physicalizes in my imagination and where I'm meeting with her, there's a world that I've brought you into that we're in a cave with a moist floor and dripping water, but it feels safe, versus we're in a lovely garden, right? So if I bring her into the lovely English cottage garden, right? How might the way you would guide that conversation be different based on the world I've invited you into now than the way you might instinctively guide the conversation if it's just Lady Lumpy and I in a dark cave with no other distractions? Did that illustrate it? That's the question.
That was very helpful. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I give her love pats every day because it's not her fault.
She's doing it. Can you remind me, I was following the story, but what were we illustrating just now?
What was I illustrating? The way that our clients invite us into a world as we are following their descriptions and their responses to the questions we're asking them in those inner spaces. So if we're in a befriend your fear process, for example, and we're asking them to have their fear be embodied outside of themselves, you know, but in their inner landscape, how that physicalizes, whether it physicalizes as a person, whether it physicalizes as an object that's recognizable, whether it physicalizes as a blob or a cloud, all those things start to tell us something in the unspoken, in the unshared, about that world, and telling us about the world that they're in or the space they're in if we didn't create it for them, if we didn't create some holodeck of the mind kind of thing. It gives us so much information. So you can imagine that if we were in session together and I were your client and you were asking me to talk to Lady Lumpy, and you're just sitting there, very cerebral, making your notes, okay, blue, cartoonish, cave, okay. And you're like in your analytical mind, thinking. In fact, you could do that right now. Like, think about that. If I'm describing Lady Lumpy left leaning is sitting there in the chair and you're keeping yourself in a very forebrain, analytical, think in the moment, think fast kind of mode, okay. What does it mean? What do I need to write down? What's important about this, right? Versus you've allowed yourself to slow down, to be present, to be in rapport, to be in trance state along with me. And I'm describing her in her little blue velvet outfit, looking all cartoony, but proper and glam, but in a cave. There are things, I have a kinesthetic awareness of it when it happens. Yours might vary, but there are things that I can feel when a client is describing that inner world to me, or their inner, their fear, their shadow, whatever it is. There's information that starts to come into my awareness behind what's really immediately consciously available in things they're not saying, or in the world that I've connected to with them. And whether that's an empath thing, I don't, like, that may just be an empath thing, I don't know. It's how I am. But I just assume everybody has the opportunity to experience that. And we've had enough questions over courses and time of people saying, well, don't we go into trance with our people? Yeah, most of the time. That does make it easier. Because as they're sharing the information, I think there's a download of information that's maybe not physical. It's not part of the words they're saying. That's part of our intuitive knowing and our gut connecting to their gut that says, oh, there's more to that. Let me make a note to explore that later. Or can you tell me more about the cave? Or her shoes sound really pretty to me. Can you tell me more about her shoes. Not why are her shoes important? Because it was a big detail. I don't even know why her shoes are important. But right, can you tell me more about that? It's always a good question if you aren't certain that something is important. Now, I'm just going to truncate because I want to make sure there's a couple of things before we wrap. One of them is, I know you all know how to create goals, you know, specific measurable goals with an outcome that is clear, right? That maybe stretches reality a little bit, like it's a stretch, but it's not like a risk or life or death, right? But that's also believable. So they believe that they can achieve it and it might take a little change to get there. So that's all there. You already have that. And if you don't have that from there, then, you know, ICF has their, you know, their SMART goals. There's 1,001 articles that talk about the same basic points of how to construct an achievable outcome, right? But you want it to be specific about the thing that you know will happen, that when that happens or when you can do that tells you you have succeeded. And next time we're going to talk about why it's good to do some integration work while the client's still in trance, is it helps them get that into those deeper shells, that willingness to do the uncomfortable thing to make the change because they become comfortable with the idea of it being different. So you're going to have established goals ahead of time. You might be asking them though, while you're doing trance work with them, when you're doing that integration, to imagine having achieved that goal. Imagine yourself, that's that future pacing stuff. Imagine yourself 6 months in the future, 1 year in the future, 5 years in the future. You've achieved that goal. What are you able to do? What have you already achieved? How does that feel in your body? What things are you hearing yourself say to yourself or hearing other people saying to you? What can you see around you that tells you you have succeeded? So that's a place where you bring it all in. If you're doing future pacing, you want to bring in all of their sensory experiences, sometimes even smell and taste if it's relevant to it. You know, if they've said like, I want to become successful so I can make more money so I can eat at fancier restaurants, you are absolutely bringing in olfactory and gustatory in that. I love it when people have me go to restaurants in my future pacing. I love to eat. I love food. So do you feel like you have a good enough grounding of how to create the objective measures and the specific goals? I mean, yeah, I thought so. Okay. And where'd my paper go? Crap. There it is. Okay. We'll talk more next time about sequencing questions. But again, you have a lot of that already. It's already in you from Sacred Depths. It's just starting to break it down and slow it down. And Bali, I don't think you have to worry about getting all those questions down. It's not nearly as important as you think it is right now. I promise. Because if you're in the moment with the client and you're future pacing them, and all you have to do is think, I want to make sure I ask them a question from each sensory experience or from each level of learning, you've got that. You've got that. I have no doubt you have that. But as far as writing effective suggestions and making a question into an effective suggestion, or vice versa, making a suggestion an effective question, that didn't make sense. We always want to focus on what do you want more of the presence of? What is the positive expression of the outcome? There are limited situations where we rely on an expression, of a negative or undesirable in a trance state. And usually it's because we are then stacking and leading it into another positive, which again, that's part of how we might do integration. So, you know, for example, if you only say to somebody as a hypnotist who's a smoking cessation client, well, of course, you only know yourself as a non-smoker now, right? And then you only talk about what life is like as a non-smoker without referencing how it's different from life that had cigarettes in it. it's much harder for them to just make the leap into, I'm this new person now. But if you reference, for example, you know, like, that's right, no longer will you tolerate. And if somebody's a smoker and an avid smoker right now wants to stay a smoker, I apologize. I'm not trying to tell you you have to change your life. This is just a very easy, concrete example. You might say to them, no longer will you tolerate the filth and the stench that you have described that surrounds your life as a smoker. That's right. You said, I'm done with that. You have made the choice today to become a non-smoker, to live the rest of your life from this moment forward the way a non-smoker does. In fact, you find it easier than ever before not even to think about cigarettes because non-smokers don't think about cigarettes. Now, all of that energy you used to use on that, now you are putting towards this goal, right? It might be a financial goal. Now, all the money you're saving, you're putting towards a vacation in Hawaii. And all the time you're saving, you're spending doing things that are more meaningful and productive for you. And your, you know, your house is cleaner and your family is happier and your dog is happier. And now you can chase after your dog or your cat or your kids or your nieces or your nephews without huffing and puffing because your body is healing. Now you see how you might take a reference to the thing they've let go of to validate it was part of their reality. And then you bring them back to, and this is the choice you're making. That's the behavioral flexibility. This is what you said you're choosing. This is what you have said you are committing to. And so now your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions are aligning with that new belief about yourself and the world and this new choice you're making. And this is how that leads you to the place you want it to be, right? So we always want to focus on what we want more of. Just remember, if we say, don't think of purple elephants, boom, we're there with the purple elephants. But said, okay, fine. So think of pink kitty cats instead. And while you're at it, a pink kitty cat with a yellow ducky riding on its back. It's right there, even if you're not a visual person, even if you don't visualize, right? Some awareness, whatever way you imagine, whether it's in pictures or words or feelings, you have in your awareness a pink cat with a yellow duck on it, right? How fun is that, right? Does that get you where you want to go? Well, it might. It depends, because you can anchor it to something. And so one of the things that's beautiful in Sacred Depths is this idea of, not idea, but this practice of having the client make a body memory. Choose, like I like to have people choose a word or a phrase that they can use to represent something for themselves that they can look for, maybe even a symbol or an image, a sound that's associated with that. So I'll take them through different sensory things as well as the body memory, right? In NLP, that is an anchor. You're saying this is now connected with that feeling in your body. You have literally, it's called setting an anchor, right? And you can break anchors. If something you don't like, where does that live in your body? What color is it? So if you have some icky thing that you're looking to transform and it's in your body like some dusty gray cloud, well, what would need to happen for that space to be transformed and instead be filled with the quality of excitement that you want to bring to that area of your life? Well, that would be bright and shiny and yellow. Great. Let that happen now. Let that yellow come in whatever way works for you and begin to transform that dusty gray cloud. Describe everything to me as it's happening. Let them lead you into their world so you can then follow them through the cues they're giving you. So when you're creating effective suggestions, we want it to be focused on what it is that they want. More often than not, we want it to be as simple as possible, an easy direction to follow without just being a binary yes or no. And again, this is actually all in your questioning mods from Joanna, whether she meant to make it that way or not. So a lot of the tools for making a question work are the same. The question to ask yourself is, in the slowed down space of trance, if I were saying this to a five-year-old, or maybe a really emotionally astute five-year-old, would this question still work? that's a good short-term filter for does it work in the subconscious? Because the subconscious is nonlinear, it is emotional, it is association-based, and it works a lot more like a 5-year-old than a 50-year-old. So what I would like between now and next time is I would like to have your questions. Like, what are the questions that you're thinking about that you might ask somebody in trance that you're maybe now not sure? Does that work? Email them to me. I will make an extra handout. If it's okay with you, if I share the questions without the names, I will make an extra handout with what works, what doesn't, what to shift. And then that gives you examples. Because if I just try to come up with the examples, they're not your examples and they're not your questions and challenges. And I like it better if it fits what you're dealing with right now. Is that a fair request? I have you. Okay. And
I want to honor time. And
I always think I'm going to be good and then I run out. But the good news is I actually got through all of the bullet points. I didn't leave any of them out.
Awesome. Well, so that's perfect. Perfect timing. This has been so great. Thank you. Everybody, please. And I'll follow up with that request from Anne. Think of questions that you might ask during process, and we can unpack them with Anne together.
I just threw my email up in the chat. It is connect@removethefriction.com. And just send them on to me and I will aggregate them. And I have a feeling, actually, looking forward at the integration stuff next time, I have every faith, because we always get exactly what we need, that the questions that you're going to throw in there are going to also lead us right into some of the integration work too, because you always do. You always ask the question for the thing that's coming next. And I love that about teaching live. I kind of miss it.
Thank you. Okay, I want to honor everybody's time, so I'm not being rude, but I just want to honor our time. Thank you. I won't see you all next week, but you will all see Anne next week.
And thank you for having me again.
You're so welcome. Thank you. All right, everyone, have a great day.